The show that puts the improv in home improvement. It's Frank Fontana on 720 WGN.
Hey there, Chicago. Happy Sunday to you. It's a beautiful day out there. And we have an amazing show for you today. Lots of action happening inside and outside the studio. We actually have a protest taking place. People who apparently did not watch the news that Bernie Sanders is no longer in the running. But there's a whole crew of people out there, I'd say about 40 plus deep, that are rallying Dave Miranda.
What does that sign say? I'd rather burn?
I'd rather burn, spelled B-E-R-N, because they're still thinking that there's a chance. Do I know? Do they know something I don't?
Yeah, I think they just want to milk it, I guess.
You want to milk it?
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going? Help us Bernie Sanders. He's our only hope, right? We have Trump who's out there. You know, I get it. You know, I see what you're saying here. How's it going, folks? Maybe we'll grab one of these people, Dave, and get a little update on what the heck's going on out there.
There's a couple dozen people, I'd say, to the WGN Showcase
very
studio.
Very peaceful group. They all look happy. Probably not thrilled that Bernie didn't make it, but they're still fighting. There may be a chance. Maybe I think what they're thinking is if Hillary goes down in flames with all of this recent WikiLeaks that are coming out, that Bernie would be right there willing to jump on this.
Yeah, as a backup, emergency backup.
Emergency backup plan. He's like an emergency backup battery, just waiting to activate.
Oh, they got a platform and everything. They're really organized here. Look at them.
They are, but you know what? The girl speaking up there kind of looks like she's like a college gal who kind of is just enjoying herself up there. She's wearing a little spring dress. And
well, the young people would follow Bernie Sanders. They were definitely supporting, and it fits perfect for our show today.
Right. We're talking about millennials. Good transition, Dave. Look at you. You've been doing this for a little while, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of bad slack, bad media about millennials. There's nothing wrong with these kids. You know, they're good kids. They just happen to live in their parents' basement.
Yeah.
And want to sleep there for another 10 more years.
And a little more picky on food. We want to know what's in the food. We want to know what's in
just picky all the way around. Like, the term, and I don't necessarily believe this, but the term I've heard being thrown around is entitled.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that seem right? That they seem that they're an entitled bunch, that they deserve things without working hard for them?
Because you know what?
Do you fall into this millennial crowd?
Yes, I do. The thing is that, you know, it's the generation that we're more into social media, more into being informed, more into asking questions, and we have it right there. All the information is so fast.
True. I mean, you do have a right to ask questions, Dave.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Whether you get the answer you like is a whole other thing. So by 2018, millennials will have the most spending power of any generation. Ooh.
So that's
some weight right there, man.
Yeah, even now, I was talking to some people, some designers that we're going to invite in the future here, and they were saying how millennials, they basically like to
meet. You mean the future of this show? Right.
Yeah, the future. Yeah, people that in the next few weeks to come to the show. And I said, hey, you know what? We're preparing a show on millennials. What's your input on that? Oh, they just like to, you know, it's less artsy. They like to be more out in the open, and
they play Pokemon Go and they have beards.
They look like
lumberjacks.
The people that are getting off the train sometimes, they're like 40s, late 40s, and they're playing Pokemon Go.
I don't get it. We talked about it last week, and I don't get it.
The show last week was a hit. I heard a lot of buzz,
a lot of people talking about it. That's cool, man. We're the fence post of conversation here on WGN 720. That's what we do. So, yeah, we'll be talking a little bit about millennials and how they kind of affect the economy and the products being sold. As a matter of fact, we got a product that is big in the millennial circuit, from what I understand. It's organic sunscreen. Yes, organic has even made it into your sunscreen. That's going to be our Frank's Fave segment for this week. It's made from an indigenous cosmetic that's also high in antioxidants. I can't tell you what it is.
Right. It's a tree with a weird name. Tata, whatever.
Big Tata tree. It's a big Tata tree. That's what it is.
Yeah.
See, check out this guy, Dave, outside the window. I bet he's Secret Service right here. See him with the jacket on? He keeps walking back and forth. I saw him downstairs as I was coming into the Tribune Tower. Folks, this is getting interesting. This is like CSI over here.
At least we're protected.
Yes, we're protected. We're inside the glass showcase studio. And then we'll be talking about, Kim Lewis, interior designer, is joining us to talk about tiny living for the millennials. I mean, you're hearing all these tiny house crazes. You see them on shows like Tiny House Nation, HGTV, FYI Network has a hit show called Tiny House Nation. And it just happens to be the network that we are producing our show for.
For what network was it?
FYI Network.
Bingo.
Well, I could say it now. It's a FYI Network. I can't tell you the name of the show, but we can talk about the network.
And it is For Your Information Network, FYI?
For your, yes, for your, in, well, no. It's
for your input?
For no, it's for something. It's for your something. Something. I can't tell you exactly what it is. I just know it's FYI.
All right. Yeah. I learned something.
Google
now.
It. It isn't, though. It isn't what you think it is. Like, I thought the same thing. It's for your information, but it's not. So if you could Google it, let's see what it stands for, because it's definitely not that. So we're going to talk about how to design a tiny home. Do you ever dream of downsizing? Do you want to get rid of all the bills and expenses and overhead and the lawn maintenance and all that stuff? Well, consider owning and designing your own tiny home. It's a movement, folks. It's a real movement. Would you ever live in one, Dave?
Yes.
But you're single. You don't have kids. You don't have a wife and other.
So save money nowadays. You know, you could save that for vacation money or, you know, shopping spree. I'm not too much of a shopper, but.
But hey. Think about it, Dave. You're entertaining. You want to be a little romantic.
I definitely need a yard for sure.
You need a yard, and you're going to need a. Most of these spaces are like lofts. There's no bedroom. It's just one box.
Yeah.
So you can't entertain and have naughty time at the same time. Is what I'm saying.
Hey, maybe that could be the excuse. You got to come closer. Come here, there's mamita.
There's only 400 square feet, babe.
You got to stick right next to me.
Yeah, move it on in. That's a good
excuse.
I like it. Good stuff. So we'll be talking to designer Kim Lewis about all that. And then I'm excited about this segment here, the National Watermelon Day Special. Is that what we're doing here? Wednesday, August 3rd. So in honor of this, we're speaking to the manager of Dark Horse Tap and Grill, and they have a whole slew of watermelon concoctions that they're going to be bringing in to sample and share with you guys on how to make your own watermelon alcoholic concoctions.
So we started talking funny. People know why.
Right. As if we're not talking funny now, it's going to get a heck of a lot worse. This should be fun. They're bringing beer, too? Is that what
beer? Watermelon beer as well.
Watermelon beer.
I've tasted apple cider beer and pear beer, but never watermelon.
Yeah, and then to start off the show, I'm excited about this. Two of the producers from our TV show for FY Network, Michelle Hunter and Michelle Myers, are here joining me in studio. And these two have a deep history in reality television and have had their hands in probably at least one or two of your favorite shows out there listening. And it's going to be cool because we're going to lift a veil on reality TV. What is the reality of producing reality television? If you ever had a question about how it's made, shows like Ice Road Truckers and My Cat from Hell, those shows.
The Kardashians. The Bachelorette.
We're going to be talking about what goes into making these shows work and how real is it?
Yes.
So if you have any questions, that's going to be coming up right after this break. We'll bring the two Michelles in. We'll call Michelle Squared. Our number, 312-981-7200, is our phone number. You can also text us at that phone line as well. If you have a question about your favorite reality show, want to know behind the scenes of it, this is the time to do it. Let's get it rocking, Dave.
It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement.
No, you're not alone.
The Frank Fontana Show.
Because I'm going to make this place your home.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. That's me. I'm Frank Fontana. And I'm so excited to bring on my next two guests because they're dear friends and co-workers here on our new television show that we're producing. Our home improvement show that focuses on older homes, and we renovate them. They're from 1950 and older, all the way up to 18-something. And these two have been in the trenches with us from the beginning. And Michelle Hunter and Michelle Myers, please say hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
So we'll say Michelle Hunter first. Say hi.
Hello, this is Michelle Hunter.
And you got Michelle Myers.
Hey there.
So we call Michelle Squared, or the Michelles, as they're known on set. And we're not going to get into our TV show right away because you guys both have a rich history in reality television. Mm-hmm. Work for a great company right now, Three Ball Entertainment. But before this, you guys were involved in some really cool shows. And Myers, why don't we start with you in terms of how you got into producing reality television?
Oh, goodness. Well, I've been producing TV for a long time, but only reality for the last 5 years or so. I grew up in Nashville, worked at a local NBC station there, produced some car shows out of Nashville for Spike TV for several years, and moved to LA. And actually, my first reality job was in Ice Road Truckers for History Channel.
Big show.
Yeah, big show. I did several seasons of Axemen, also for History Channel. I worked in the field for that one. Haunted Collector for Sci-Fi.
Haunted Collector?
Yes.
What was that about?
It was hosted by John Zaffis, who is a renowned demonologist. And he would investigate homes that were having issues, paranormal issues.
So my first reality question is it real?
It is. The whole point of the shows, reality shows in general as a genre, is to get in there and show what's actually happening. So we do our best to be there with the cameras when stuff is happening. Sometimes that means getting up in the middle of the night to cover something, or, you know, we have to go where the action is. So that's
a common question I get is, Frank, how are you guys just rolling cameras constantly? And the answer to that is what?
Well, we are most of the time. Mm-hmm. For instance, Ice Road Truckers, I worked in the post-production, not in the field for that one, but I had to intake all of the footage that came in from the field, and we had literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of video per week that go into to make a one-hour show.
Going to guys driving a truck over ice.
Yes, exactly.
You wonder, how many hours of that can you watch?
Yeah, well.
But it's a hit show. It's a fascinating show.
Yeah, so for every, 44 minutes of gold, there are hundreds and hundreds of hours that cameras are rolling where, nothing interesting is happening. But
you're just waiting for that moment.
Waiting for the moment, exactly.
Where the truck starts to slide sideways and you're like, this is gold.
That's right. Yes.
He might die, but it's gold.
yes, that's exactly it.
Michelle Hunter.
Hello.
Talk to me.
I'm actually new. I'm very new to reality TV. I produced events for charities and major corporate companies for about 12 years, and got into reality TV a little over a year ago. So before this, actually, my first show was My Cat from Hell on
Big Show
Animal Planet.
What's that dude's name again?
Jackson Galaxy.
He's a phenomenon. The show is a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's spun off into variations of My Cat from Hell. Mm-hmm. Now he's fixing up the
shelters, which is super exciting. Funny enough, working on this new home renovation show with you, the show that I worked on with that season was a renovation show for a cat shelter, which was amazing. And lots and lots of hours of waiting for cats to come out.
That's got to be. And cats are unlike humans where you can't taunt them a little bit.
No. We waited so long for some cats to come out of the closet, under the couch, and then you catch it when it happens. So, awesome.
And Jackson is a true, I want to get into his backstory. Mm-hmm. We're already getting some phone calls. Folks, if you have some questions for some phenomenal reality show producers and you want to know the realities of what it takes to put a real TV show together, like who pays for what and what are the stars of these shows like, 312-981-7200. Let's take our first call. We have Dave on the phone. Hey, Dave.
Hi, a comment and two quick questions. We do not like it when you replay everything we saw in the last segment. Then you go to a commercial and then you play it again. We're watching your show. Please do not repeat it. Two questions. First one, do these actors have to join a union to be on this television? And the second question is, what is the minimum pay, and can you give me any numbers on any of the reality shows of what they're getting paid? Because a lot of these people, I'm going, they're not making any money. How can they do this year after year?
Good question, Dave. Michelle, you want to take that one?
Well, they're not actors. They actually are real people, and we're there documenting their lives. So, no, they're not part of a union. As far as pay, it varies greatly. Actually, I'm not even really a party to that.
And there's different types of reality, too. Like, what we do is reality based on our business. So we already have an existing business, which is a home design and renovation company. So we're, we get paid in real life to do jobs, as well as there's a talent fee, which I can tell you, Dave, isn't huge. It's decent. And that varies. I could tell you as the host and personality for HGTV shows and other shows, it does get decent. when you get there. But if you think of like the Kardashians of the world, now they're on another planet. I mean, in terms of fees and income, and because their show is such a huge success. But, you know, I've heard of stories, Dave, where, you know, like the some of these kind of first year reality show guys are making maybe $5,000 an episode or less, you know. So
I heard those crab guys were making like $35,000 per episode. And basically, but on the other side, there's like it's called Big Tuna, where these guys go and catch these big tuna fish. And the guy catches one fish for the whole season. The guy's probably about $30,000-$40,000 in debt. And he's back for another season. I'm like, going, how do you stay in business unless the salary of the show is basically propping him up?
Well, Michelle, Hunter, you want to take this one?
With the limited experience I have with these shows, the people that we helped on the cat show, they went through an entire casting process. There was some of the families got a small check if they had to miss an entire day of work or something like that. But they... their payoff is really the help with their animal. And so, you know, lots of people wanted to be on the show. They invested their time, and their payoff is that they're going to finish the show with a well-behaved cat. So for them, that's their payment.
So would you say that, though, the exposure that these companies and these people get is the trade-off for a lesser pay?
I would say that is definitely the case. We do choose as producers businesses. If you're going in to highlight a business, for instance, like in the Wicked Tuna situation or Deadliest Catch or, you know, Axemen, these are already successful businesses. We're just popping in and showing what it is they do. So they would never be selected for TV if they didn't already have a viable business. Mm-hmm. That
yeah,
was,
but like Dave's,
you know,
saying, if you watch a couple of these seasons, as the seasons go on, mm-hmm. there's seasons where these guys aren't striking gold and they're not hitting big scores of tuna. What is that like? I mean, have you ever experienced this, Michelle? Like,
well, I have, and yeah, that's part of the drama of covering what's happening in their life. Is yes, they, you know, the pressure is real for them. They have to make money to feed their families, to keep their boats in the water, or, you know, their equipment running for whatever show it might be. So, you know, our job is just to cover that. But as far as the pay, normally the TV pay part of it is not going to be what's keeping
them. Not going to make them retire.
No, exactly.
And Dave, I hope that helps clear some of your questions up. And to go back to your original statement, why things are repeated, I think that's an interesting thing to talk about. Dave, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. So talk. Why are things repeated, Michelle? Why do people have to be succumb to sit and watch a repeat of a scene after they come back from commercial?
Well, sometimes viewers aren't watching the show from the beginning, mm-hmm. and you have to assume that people are kind of coming in and out. Attention spans can be short. People don't always see the beginning of a show, and we have to assume that they need a little updating if they've been in the kitchen or, you know, clicking through channels and just turn it on. So that's why the updates are in there. And it also just refreshes you, sets you up for what's about to happen next. Because a lot of times what's happened in the previous segment of the show kind of leads in to what's you're going to see next. And that's
very
just part of the storytelling process.
We do have to take a quick break. We're going to have more with the two Michelles, Michelle Myers, Michelle Hunters, producers from Los Angeles and Nashville here working on my television show. And both have tons of experience in the world of reality television, worked on some of maybe your favorite shows out there, like Animal Planet and Discovery Channel shows. We do have a call from Darlena that's going to be holding. She wants to know about Ice Road Truckers.
There's something wrong with the world today.
Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show. Thanks for listening, folks. We're here till 3 o'clock right here on WGN 720. And we're talking the reality of reality television. We're taking your questions. We have two producers from my reality show, which I can't tell you the name of, but I can tell you the network. It's going to be on FYI Network, hopefully debuting at the end of this year, if not the first quarter of 2017. Michelle Myers, Michelle Hunters, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
Yeah, a little delayed reaction. They're just soaking in the studio and the view of the corner here on Michigan Ave.
This is a great spot.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the whole thing here is iconic. It's awesome.
It is.
So we got some phone calls coming in, ladies. And they, you know, just to recap here, like people are texting in, they hate the recaps.
Right.
847 says, if they didn't repeat a half hour show, we would be down to 6 minutes of actual television. There's just not enough interesting footage. What say you, producers of footage?
Well, I know that when commercials come on, I'll change the channel. I mean, I know the recaps can be annoying, but for the people that come back, that, again, Michelle mentioned this earlier, that weren't watching, you kind of need, you want to see a little bit of it. I have seen some that are a bit long, and you're like, come on, come on, let's get this moving. But
like moments like Real Housewives of New Jersey, when Teresa flipped the table over. Do you remember that moment?
Oh, yeah.
I do. I remember that moment. Because they played it over and over again. And I... Dave, yes.
It's like radio. They play the same 40 songs over and over and over.
This is true. We are creatures, as human beings, we're creatures of repetition, I believe. It's a comfort thing. But, I mean, I get what the texters are saying in the college. As a matter of fact, we do have a question here. Darlena's been holding on. Hey, Darlena, thank you so much for holding on. You're on with Frank, Michelle, and Michelle.
Hi. It's so nice to speak with the both of everybody there, Michelle and Michelle.
Thank you.
One of my questions is, everybody loves Alex, I think, you know, Ice Road Trucking. And how many children does he have?
That I couldn't tell you. I did not work with him personally. Oh. I'm sure that information is on the History Channel website. I'm not sure on his bio information.
Well, and Darlene, you bring up a good point. How intimate do you get with...
I think he's got about 12.
12 kids. Good Lord, a busy man.
Yeah, Alex was... I think everybody's favorite.
He's got the little cabin in the back of his truck.
Yes.
Little stabbing cabin.
Did either one of you work for the Ice Road Truckers?
I worked in the post department, so I wasn't out in the field for that. I reviewed.
Well, explain what, for the layman, what does post department mean?
Well, there's the field department, and that's what we're doing right now for your show, Frank, doing the field work where we're actually out here shooting the show, and then all that footage gets sent back to the post-production department, and they take it all and make
the magic happen in the back?
Exactly. Cut it into the show that you actually see on television. So it's kind of
two
different parts.
There's a lot of work that goes into it. Darlene, thank you so much for your question. And hey, by the way, since you called in with a great question, we're going to give you a prize. You're going to get a free oil change at Cassidy Tire and Service Centers. They're family-owned and operated since 1914 with 15 convenient locations throughout Chicagoland. You can visit Cassidy Tire and Service Experts, the best price on tires and the best service, too. You can find them at CassidyTire.com. So, Darlene, what should hold on, and Dave Miranda will get your information.
Is it possible to ask one more question?
Why, sure you can.
Thank you, dear. I got a whole mess of them. But I love one of my favorites was when they adopted the children. From India, you know, the little boy and the little girl, and they were, you know, they're small people.
Sure.
Are you familiar? Pardon?
I did not work that season of the show. I'm sorry. I don't really have information on that. I'm so sorry.
Oh, me too. I was. And then it looks like what's their faces are going to get a divorce on the farm.
Wow.
You're not familiar with that either?
I got to do some catching up on this show. I watch a couple episodes. You sound like you're a dedicated fan, Darlene. That's awesome.
Well, no, I don't watch much TV, but that's my favorite with the two little kids. They were, you know, small people, midgets, and they adopted two children that were going to be grown. They're going to grow just like they have the same problems, issues, and that. And that
was
one of my favorite ones of the babies. They were so cute.
Oh, I gotta catch up on the show.
Yeah, I wish they could bring that back.
Well, right into the network. It always helps. There is people who actually listen to all this, the viewer comments and stuff. But Darlene, we do have to go. I appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
On, and Dave will get your information.
Thank you.
You got it. Well, we'll keep on rocking. We have some more calls and texts coming in. Let's talk to Sue. Hey, Sue, you're on with Frank, Michelle, and Michelle.
Hi, good afternoon, Frank and Michelle. I love WGN and love you, Frank.
Oh, I love you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're welcome. Yeah, I have a whole mess of questions, too. And thank you, ladies, for being on. I haven't had a TV for about a year now. That's a whole other story. But
good for
I just
you.
Really, really... Oh, okay. It's been a process.
Yeah.
But I really, really love reality programs, and I'm trying to keep it brief. Like, when I was a little kid, my mom woke my sister and I up to see the wedding of Prince Charles and Diana. And, I mean, I've always been very, very interested. A lot of things, unfortunately, are tragic in life, but seeing things live and having that really live documentation and, you know, emotion and expression of people. And, of course, you're, like you said, need to, I'm sure, tape hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. But it just really seems to me, like I said, I'm trying to be concise,
yeah, yeah.
that these are real people on these programs, and I just especially find ice road truckers and the logging and the tuna and the crabbing and all that very, very interesting. When, I guess, when you ladies or whomever all of your staff are working with, I mean, yeah, you have to edit a lot of things, but that their comments and their feelings and emotions about things. I remember a long time ago, there was one time, I mean, where one of the tuna people, one of the guys died and so on. And that's real emotion, right? That's going on.
It absolutely is. And that's why these shows are so interesting. And that's the reality of reality television. We're there just dropping in on their lives. What happens day to day is actually what's going on in their lives. We're just there with the cameras to capture what's and be a part of it and bring it to the audience. But yes, absolutely. There has been some terrible tragedies that have happened, you know, while cameras were rolling, and mm-hmm. you know, we keep rolling and bring right. it to the viewers so that you can see what's actually going on in these people's lives.
Yeah. And I just thank you for the work you do. And like I said, I'm certainly not saying this, none of the public wants to be played. And, you know, I just feel like, again, when I said about being so interested in live radio and live things that happen in life, this is it's just very, very interesting.
Well, thank you,
Sue. Brings us closer together, and thank you.
I agree with you 100%. And there is an element of television, I'm sure, like out there, like the Kardashians, that is produced mm-hmm. to a degree. And the reality there isn't so much the reality because they need to control everything. But I can tell you on the shows that Michelle's have both been on, myself involved with, there's real moments. I mean, even the show we're shooting now, I can't divulge too much of what's going on, but there's people who have had children during the production of our show, and there's, you know, mm-hmm. discovery of tremendous financial fire damage and people's lives that are like, they, you know, just purchased homes and they spent all this money.
Right.
So it really does play out in, and sometimes, you know, it's great for television, but, you know, I can tell you personally, I'm a compassionate guy. And when things happen to people, I feel it for them. And what we're producing is real, Sue.
Thank you so much again for all of your work.
You got it. Before you go, I want to thank you for your call, and I want to give you a little something for calling in. I want to give you Lou Malnati's gift certificate.
Oh, thank you.
Is that good for you?
Thank you. That works for me. Thank you very much.
Well, great. Hold on, Sue. I'm gonna have Dave Miranda, my producer, get your information. We'll get you out some good grub.
Well, it's great to hear from somebody that you know, really gets what we do and enjoys the fact that it is, you know, there is real emotion involved and these are real lives that,
yeah.
you know, that we're seeing.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and that, you know, listen, sometimes reality TV can get a bad rap, but there's certain genres within reality mm-hmm. that you work. I mean, your show that you worked on before this, I mean, is huge, My Cat from Hell. And the whole, you know, spinoff that's come from it.
There's a lot of emotion that happens. I mean, sometimes I'm looking at what's happening behind a monitor, but you can see the tears welling up in people's eyes, and we're you know, out in the field, we're with these people long hours, you know, sometimes 16 hours a day we're with these people, and so we become close with them mm-hmm. And when these things do happen, like some of the things that happened on our show, we feel it. We see the fear sometimes. Oh, what have I gotten myself into with the cat show? I see, you know, people that have tried to change behavior and in their pet for over 10 years, they can't do it. And when there's a breakthrough, it's amazing. So,
I find Jackson fascinating for so many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And his story, personally, we're running out of time, but maybe we'll give it another minute here. Quickly, tell me about Jackson and My Cat from Hell.
Jackson Galaxy, you know, went through a long over 10 years of struggle. He writes about it in his books with drugs and alcohol addiction, and really took a chance on volunteering at a cat shelter and, you know, got sober and started connecting with these animals, really, really sensitive to cats in particular, and started studying up and working closely with professionals, and here we are.
Unreal.
Very unreal. It's amazing. So, very cool show.
Lots of stuff happens around. We got tons of calls coming in. We're unfortunately running. I'll tell you what. If you guys want to keep those calls coming in, Dave, do you want to keep the girls for just a couple more minutes? Oh boy, this is funny. We got the entire show. My wife just pulled up with the kids out front. We have two homeowners that are on our show sitting out there. We got the Michelles in here. All we're missing is Colonel, our show producer, and we got our whole crew here. All right, we're going to wrap up our conversation here. Take one more call on the realities of reality television, and we're going to quickly talk to some folks about organic sunscreen and how the millennials are just dying for it. Let's talk to John. Hey, John, you're on with Frank, Michelle, and Michelle. What's your question?
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering, all these ghost shows that are supposed to be reality, if there's allegations of fakery or, you know, scripted, it's supposed to be unscripted, would the FCC investigate that or not? Do they bother?
Well, I've worked on a paranormal show. I worked on Haunted Collector with John Zaffis. And I know for us, there was no fakery there. I was part of the casting process. I personally talked to all the people that were having the problems at their homes. And these people were very scared and really did need help. And John Zaffis and the show would go in and we would do our best to help them in their situation. I can't speak to the fakery part of it because, you know, everything we did was definitely real. I haven't ever heard of a case like that, so...
It seems like they and John, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We do have to wrap this up, but it seems like on those shows, it could be like sleight of camera, could be different ways to, you know, position that story that make it. But you know, it's who knows? It's ghosts. Could be real or maybe it's not.
Yeah, that's true. And you'll notice in a lot of the shows, we never say definitively this is what it is. It's, you know, looking at the evidence that we have, this may be what it is.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Now, you can't go in there and say for sure we know it's a ghost. You know, that's...
Well, I can tell you this. On our show, everything is real.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
right?
That's absolutely true.
We're doing real
true.
Makeovers for real homeowners and real reward at the end of all this.
Yes, mm-hmm. That is 100% true.
Michelle
and
Hunter,
really
Michelle Myers, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. We'll have to bring you back before the season's over and do a whole recap of how our show went when we're allowed to actually talk about it.
Yes.
How about that? What
yeah.
a concept.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank
it's
you
been
guys.
So much fun.
Enjoy the Sunday and say hi to the kitties out there for me.
I will. Okay. Thank you.
All right, we're going to switch gears here and we're going to, you know, focus back in on the millennials and their need for, you know, I don't know, the right product. We're joined by Barrett Seymour, CEO of Manda. Hey, Barrett, how are you?
Great, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, so my family and I, we're big into the organic movement with our food, with our product, and I'm really excited to see your product surface here. It's the organic sun paste. I actually have it in my hand. I love the packaging, and I love the texture of it. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so excited about it. We started actually through Kickstarter in October of last year. Did really great. We were able to... more than double our goal, and recently, earlier this year, wrapped up our first round of production and are steadily making headroads into retail sales and bringing awareness to our product. And really, the goal of Manda was to create a product that not only works superior to anything out there, but that's better for the planet, too.
Well, I'm reading the ingredients. It's pretty basic. I mean, you got organic coconut oil, organic beeswax, organic zinc, cocoa butter, all organic elements, cinnamon oil. And you sound pretty young, dude. How old are you?
33.
What spawned this business idea?
Well, we're from Southern California. We're surfers, and being out in the sun is part of our everyday life. And sunscreen is something, you know, as common as brushing our teeth. So it's like part of our life every single day and something we're always using. And really the products out there just weren't cutting it. They would, you know, burn our eyes or be harmful to the environment or especially to destroying coral reefs, which is kind of our natural playground. And so we wanted something that worked better, that was more waterproof, that we could rely on and that kind of brought a simpler approach to it without absolutely no chemicals or synthetic ingredients. And so that's why we focused on including organic ingredients and keeping it simple, like you mentioned.
Well, did you whip this up in a kitchen first, or like how did you do your your R&D on this?
Yeah, for probably about 5-6 years we kind of made our own in the kitchen and just slowly sort of evolved into it and got it to a point where we're like, you know, this is great. Now let's get all the certifications and science behind it to make sure it has a stable shelf life and can achieve the SPF rating that we need and obviously tick all the boxes to sufficiently protect people. So we hired a chemist to further refine our formula that we had kind of semi-designed in the kitchen, and just took it from there. And yeah, after about 2 years in working in R&D with our chemists, we came up with the product that you're holding now.
Yeah, it's great. Like I said, the texture is awesome. It smells, there's really no smell to it. So it's not offensive in any way, which some of the other sunscreens, you could just smell the chemicals and the latent into it, which I'm not a fan.
And those are so toxic, not only to the environment and just, you know, even taking a shower after you're in the sun, those chemicals wash off your body and can pollute watersheds and, you know, just do a lot of damage.
Well, and then you know, people
to your body as well. So our kind of motto was, if you can't put it in your body, you shouldn't put it on your body. And so that's why we're absolutely no chemicals.
I agree with that. And it's, and you could, you know, people say, oh, I put the sunscreen on so I could protect myself from skin cancer. At the same time, you're filling your pores and your skin with cancer-laden, you know, chemicals inside of these sunscreens. So
100%. Yeah. And they're causing free radicals and have other sort of carcinogens and really toxic things in them. And so that's where Monda made its point of difference is we said, one, we're going to change the application. And that's part of it. Most people are used to a lotion or a thinner textured sunscreen that actually absorbs into your skin and uses your skin as a filter to process the sun's rays. Whereas Monda is an actual physical barrier, like a shield, where nothing is going into your skin. It's deflecting those rays and sitting on top of your skin. And that's why there's that unique sort of thicker paste-like texture that you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm actually applying it to my hand right now, and it, literally it's going on like a film, but then it disappears to a translucent, but you could still feel that something's on there. Where could people buy where could people buy it right now? I'm just curious.
Yeah, the best place to buy it, we are in several retailers, but most of them are more coastal oriented. But if you check us out on Instagram at Monda, M-A-N-D-A, there's a URL link to our website. You can buy directly from there. And that's probably the best way to find out about us and our other ingredients and just sort of what the brand stands for and how the sunscreen functions, everything like that.
Sounds good. Barrett, thank you so much for taking time on a Sunday. I love the product. Love the idea. Best luck with it, man. One more time, the website is?
The website's simplebynature.net.
Simplebynature.net. Thanks so much, Barrett. Have a good day.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, cool. We have to take a quick break here. When we come back after that, we're going to be diving into the tiny house movement and how you could design your own if you're interested. By the way, that's my son clapping for me back there. Thank you, son. I appreciate it.
Testing, testing. Uno, dos, tres, catorce.
He's the go-to guru for great design ideas.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
He's edgy. He's in your face.
The Frank Fontana Show. It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement.
At least we're trying to improve your life. If we can't improve your home, we'll maybe give you a couple of tidbits of information that could improve your life. And that's my son, Luca, joining me on the co-host. Yes, son. Yeah. You want to talk to? All right. Well, how about you say hi to Kim Lewis then? How about that?
Hi.
Hi. Right. Kim Lewis, interior designer, is joining us next. We're talking about the tiny living phenomenon, how millennials are jumping all over this. So we got Kim Lewis joining us on the phone. We have Annette in studio. Dave, you want to tell me what's going on?
The thing is that our green room is packed right now. So
so you're just hanging. Somebody's hanging here.
Yes.
Got it. Future guest just hanging out in the studio. Well, hi. How are you?
Good getting the nerves away.
Yeah.
Okay. Scaring the nerves
away. Oh, so you want to like kind of get into it and just feel it.
Yeah.
Feel the whole radio experience. Well, good to meet you, Annette.
Nice to meet you.
And Annette is going to be, you're a designer as well.
Correct.
But we'll be talking to you in just a few about beer gardens. Right now, we're going to turn our focus onto tiny houses. And on the phone joining us is Kim Lewis. Hey, Kim.
Hi there. How are you today?
I'm great. A little craziness going on here. I got my son, who's 5 years old, joining me in the studio. We have one of our future guests sitting next to me. And then we have...
I love it.
And then we have our family and our producers in the green room right now.
I'm not five.
You're not? How old are you? Oh, you're going to be five, right? Okay, good. And you can tell he is not shy like his dad.
That's awesome.
All right, so let's talk about it. Tiny House Nation, it's huge. What is the movement all about? Because my wife says she could do it. I say I can never do it.
Yeah, you know what? Tiny homes are making a big impact across this country, like we've seen, and especially with the millennials. you know, I think it's because people are really wanting to move from the suburbs to the cities, especially with the millennial age. You've got a really tech-savvy generation that wants to live where all the hip and cool places are. And so you're seeing a movement more of living and working downtown and moving toward the cities. So you've got a generation that is really interested in trying to own their own home, and a tiny home is a perfect place to start.
I agree with you. I have a hard time swallowing the pill. I think to me it's a it's a trend versus because it's like one of those things. It's like, right, it's cool now, and if you're single millennial, that's cool too. I watch these shows on FYI Network. There's Tiny House Nation, and you'll see entire families downsizing into these boxes or these old shipping containers that they convert into some awesome looking living environments. So stylistically, I think it's totally cool to be able to jam pack a whole bunch of design into these boxes. Functionally, though, I have a hard time swallowing that pill on how that could be better than 1,000 square foot or 1,500 square feet. Because I feel like that's reasonable size, 1,000 square foot. 500 square foot is, which is the average of these small homes, correct?
Yeah, that's about right. Anywhere from 150, actually, to 500 square feet. You know, I'll tell you, though, I get phone calls. I get multiple phone calls a week for these tiny homes. And I'll be honest, it really ranges. Age ranges anywhere from the 25 to 35, so all the way up to 65. So you've got baby boomers who are wanting to downsize, have some more financial freedom to go see grandkids, take their trailer on the road. I mean, it's kind of a bona fide RV if you really think about it.
This is true. And I like the idea of, I've seen them done mobile, you know, where they are like a shipping container that's living on some kind of pull, like a trailer pull. I think that idea is neat. Some of these homes lead you to believe, some of these shows on television lead you to believe that these are these families' only homes.
Yeah, and that is sometimes the case, but I also get phone calls for people that are, you know, you have more and more small business entrepreneurs in our country. That ratio is going up. So people are looking for a place to also work, possibly work from home. So you're also seeing a group of people that are getting these tiny homes and putting them in their backyard and using them as mobile or home offices.
And now, before we go into the design, Kim, let's talk about money. Like, what is it? What is the average cost to facilitate one of these tiny homes?
Yeah, I would say anywhere from $40,000 to $60,000 gets you a really nice tiny home that is something you can make your own. And that's on a trailer, usually.
And are we talking, like, custom timber and 2x4s? Are we talking, like, shipping containers?
We're talking 2x4s.
Okay. Have you ever worked with shipping containers before? Because this seems to be a big trend, shipping container homes.
I have. In fact, I actually went to Ghana, West Africa, and did a project over there, and they've been using shipping containers for decades. And, you know, that trend is really something we're seeing now in the United States. But, you know, of course, people over there were doing it out of necessity. But, yeah, shipping containers are just a little bit harder to run ventilation through and whatnot, but you can absolutely go that route. I prefer the 2x4 route.
Gotcha, yeah. I mean, it is rare that you can reference Ghana as the starting point of a style trend that doesn't involve, exactly, you know, loud yellows and oranges and blacks in wardrobe.
That's right.
Fascinating stuff. Hey, listen, we're going to take a quick break, Kim. When you come back and join us, we're going to get into the fixtures, the finishes, the look, the style, the sustainability of living in a tiny home. And then, folks, if you have a question for Kim or myself about how do you find a tiny home? How do you even start the process? Where do you get one? Where do you build one? Give us a call. 312-981-7200 is our phone number here. You can also text us in at that same number, 312-981-7200. And we'll talk tiny homes after this. Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show. Hey, that's me. We're here till 3 o'clock. The boys from the beat are coming up after that. Right now, we're talking Tiny House Nation. Tiny House tips. Oh, we're here till 3. Yeah, you're right. What did I say? 4?
You said 4 o'clock. I think you want to extend an hour.
I was trying to just pitch for it and see if the uppers go for it. Maybe just slide in. Nobody will know the difference. We're talking Tiny House Nation with designer Kim Lewis. Kim, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
So we left off with talking about the kind of broad strokes of tiny house living and who is it for and what is it for. Now let's talk about actually designing one of these homes. What is your starting budget? When you talk interior design, I mean, we're in our world, we can range, you know, for anywhere from $50,000 to $200,000 on just interior design alone. Where does that range start with tiny homes?
You're really looking at somewhere between $15,000 and $30,000, depending on, you know, that includes appliances. So that's really everything. What I love most about tiny homes is you really have this opportunity, because the space is so small, you have this unique opportunity to really kind of go all out and make it unique, get kind of the best of the best finishes, because you're not, you know, the space is so much smaller. So I really think you can make these designs more unique and have a lot of character.
And walk me through your design process. Does it differ from a traditional home interior design process?
It really does, because these tiny homes, every single inch matters. So I tell people, you really want to think of it like it's a puzzle, right? You have three kind of big puzzle pieces to focus on. And I say you start with texture, and then you look at color, and then finishes are kind of that final detail. So with texture, you've got this really fun opportunity to make the space unique. One of the tricks that I tell people is, you know, try a fun, big graphic wallpaper on the walls to actually, it's kind of all about making the space look bigger with visual and optical illusion.
Well, and I was going to ask you about wall coverings, because one would think, you know, something too busy in a small space might just be so overpowering. So choosing the right one is crucial.
It is, but it's also a misconception. You know, it's all about using whatever texture you use. I say use it on all of the walls. You know, same thing goes with color. If you people believe, you know, if it's a small space, I have to use a really light and bright, something like a white, because that'll make the space look bigger. That's not necessarily true. I just tell people, you know, paint all of the walls the same color and even the ceiling. And this kind of gives you this visual that when you're standing in the space, it's actually bigger than it is.
Interesting point. And how important is lighting and windows in a small, tiny home like this?
It's critical. The windows, I would say, are the most critical decision, because you really want to bring the outdoors in so that you don't feel claustrophobic, especially if you've got a tiny home that has the loft bed upstairs. You know, you definitely want to think about adding dormers to the roof with some skylights, and that really helps open the space up.
Sleeping is an interesting scenario with this type of home. Other than a loft situation, what are some of the options that you service your clients?
Yeah, my favorite design that I've ever done was a two-trailer home, and this was living in one side and the bedroom and bathroom on the other side. So you've got two trailers that are connected with a deck in between, and this really honestly felt as big as a nice big studio apartment. These two clients have two big dogs, and it really doesn't feel small at all. So I say that's my favorite design in terms of sleeping situations. The loft, you know, you've got a design where you can put a loft on one side and then your kids' loft on the other. And that's for a family that's okay being in really close quarters. But a lot of these families want to be outside. And if you think about the amount of time you spend at home, for families that really are out on the road, outside, you know, going to parks on the weekends, you don't spend a ton of time at home. They really like to be outside. So we give them situations where they've got a big deck outside, they've got a really nice outdoor area, and these are families that like to spend time outside. So those windows are really critical.
Cool. Now, let's shift gears to the reality, all right? So the reality is you're in this space, and I could tell you in my home, I have two kids, a wife, no dog, and we could clean the house, and in 10 minutes, it looks like we didn't clean at all. I could not fathom in a tiny home it could be easier, maybe. I don't know. But it's like in 2 seconds, my kids would destroy it and it would stay that way, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's all about multifunctionality. You know, multifunctional pieces of furniture organization is critical. But what I love is the bigger spaces we have, the more we tend to let them get messy, right?
Yeah.
If you think about that extra spare bedroom, it kind of becomes like the catch-all or the attic. How many families across this country have attics that have so much stuff up there, and you might go up there every couple of years or once a year? I say get rid of that stuff, downsize, less is more these days.
I agree. It's and we're doing that. We peel back. I mean, as a designer myself and being in the renovation business, We're guilty of it. We collect stuff. I mean, I get all sorts of cool things that people want to give me and show me and send me. And it's like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to throw that out. And next thing you know, we have a whole basement full of stuff that needs to be thrown out. But
that's right.
So I guess maybe the Tiny House Nation could help in that regard.
It definitely does.
And I say Tiny House Nation just as a general statement. Now, let's talk about resale. Is there a resale market for tiny houses?
You know, that's a really interesting topic that I've been talking with builders about recently, because this is such a new trend that we don't have a lot of data on that. But what I could say is you're kind of looking at something like a little bit better of resale value than an RV. You know, an RV is similar to a car. You drive it off the lot, and what, it depreciates within, what, 20%, right, when you drive it off the lot? I think a tiny home is less than that, but obviously resale might be a little bit harder. But I also think, because, you know, you said you think this is a trend. I actually think it's a trend, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I really believe this is something that's going to stick around. And you're already seeing homes go up online for sale, and people are not having a hard time selling these because the market is there.
Interesting. Well, let's take a call. We have a call that's got a question here. Hey, Joe, thanks for calling the show.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing great. What's your question?
Yeah, I have two questions. One is, how does she fasten these homes to the, like a foundation, or are they on wheels? How does she fasten the, you know, the homes?
That's a good question.
Like a normal home, you'd be on the foundation.
Well, she just dropped off the line. She's actually coming right back on. Dave, if you could lock in Joe, and we'll get Kim back on the line real quick. I got the same question, because I mean, there would probably be code issues.
Yeah, that's my second question was codes.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, the different counties have codes now, and those are the hardest to get around.
Well, let's ask Kim. She's back joining us. Kim, so the question Joe had was two things. Do you have to, if it's mobile, are you fastening all these things down? And the second part of his question was, how about code and code violations for these? Do they abide by the same laws as construction does on a fixed home?
These are great questions. What we usually do is, in framing, is something called hurricane strapping. So that is making the frame more, you've got more strict regulations on wind load and the way the frame is put together. And then in terms of, you know, obviously highway restrictions vary from state to state. So you have to stay, if you're going mobile, you have to stay within certain dimensions. 8.5 feet wide by 13.5 tall is a pretty good average across the country. And then, of course, the weight regulations as well. So, yes, codes are definitely more restricted. And then also where you land the tiny home is a whole nother topic.
Oh, so if it's built in a factory, let's just say, or in a warehouse, you're not necessarily going to have the building inspector coming out saying, well, this plumbing line isn't quite run right, or you have knob and tube wire in your walls. And, you know, so none of that's existing, right? So this is just kind of almost like a clubhouse or a treehouse, in essence.
It's more like a treehouse, but it has to be built with these wind loads in mind. So, yes, the framing is critical.
Interesting. All right, Joe, there's your answer.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for calling the show. Well, that's fast. That's good stuff. I like to hear that. And Kim, this is fascinating. You know, I've dabbled in the topic a little bit. I would love to, you know, design one or two here and there. But, you know, you're changing my thought process on it. So I appreciate that.
Oh, yay. I'm so glad to hear that. And you know what I love is that because the space is small, you're really up close and personal with things in your home. So I really love the idea of using things that are a little bit more that are just more special. It's like when you approach this less is more idea, the less things you get, let's put a little bit more money into them. Like I found this beautiful pattern sink from Kohler that is actually handmade. You know, we're also seeing this handmade movement. You know, you've got craft fairs that are coming up and popping up, and artisan movements. And I think people really appreciate things that are more handmade.
And so you could definitely squeeze a lot of that into these tiny homes. Now, Kim, unfortunately, we're running out of time. I love the topic. We got to have you back on, because I think we can go a million different directions with it. Kim, how can people get a hold of you?
Check out Instagram, Kim Lewis Designs. If you're interested in seeing more tiny home inspiration, I've got plenty up there to look at.
Thank you so much for your time, Kim. Have a great Sunday.
He's a dad. He's a designer. He's the guy who can make your house a home. and maybe make your husband a little handier.
No, you're not.
This is the Frank Fontana Show.
Because I'm going to make this place your home.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Ah, yes, folks, it's the middle of summer. And that means it's time for some refreshing cocktails. And Wednesday, August 3rd, is National Watermelon Day. And we got some specials here. Chad McConaughey? McConaughey is joining me from Dark Horse Tap and Grill. He's a GM over there. Chad, thanks so much. I appreciate this.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Dude, I'm digging the whole handlebar stash.
Thank you.
Too,
it's a
man.
Throwback
you're rocking
to the baseball
that.
Era, you know.
Love that.
Thank you.
And you came bringing some amazing looking cocktails here, and of course Dave comes out of the booth because he smells the alcohol from behind.
Right.
Yeah, my wife is actually joining me in studio along with my two kids, Luca and Lola, because they love watermelon, right, guys?
Watermelon.
Watermelon, but you're not having the alcoholic watermelon, Luca. That's only for at home, okay? No, I'm joking. I would never. I'm going to get all these calls. You are going to get... All right, anyway. So thank you all for joining me, or at least you, Chad, and the others are just kind of freeloading. My wife's drinking. What are you drinking there, hon?
Probably the best Bloody Mary I've ever had.
Chad, right. why don't you break it down here? Wow. What is my wife drinking? There's a giant sausage of some sort sticking out of my wife's cocktail.
There is, yes. That we didn't get sound those from Paulina Meat Market. It's a smoked honey pork sausage that we get...
What is she drinking? Break down the drink. It's a Bloody Mary, but it's a watermelon Bloody Mary?
That's not the watermelon Bloody Mary. Basically, what that is just our vodka and our Bloody Mary mix, and then we put all the toppings on top.
Now, is that a Dark Horse staple right there?
It is, yes.
Oh, my God. It's not only visually stunning, but, babe, how does it taste? Cher, how does that taste?
Spectacular.
Give us a flavor Truly. Profile. A la Food Network style.
It's a little spicy. I taste a little salt. Yeah. And I also taste a little pickle, which some people don't like, but I love. Mm-hmm. So the variety of all those ingredients together, honestly, it's fantastic.
Is that a piece of cheese on there as well?
That is a cheese curd.
A cheese curd.
Wisconsin cheese curd.
And then I see a bell pepper, is it?
It's a peppercini.
A peppercini.
Yes.
Fascinating. I love it. All right. So let's start there, hon. You work on that. I'm working on a watermelon margarita, and I don't know if they told you. Dad? I'm a margarita fan. Yes, son. Daddy's busy right now. He has a cocktail in his hand. He's hosting a radio show. What is it? Sure. You could talk
absolutely.
On that. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. You talk away. Just talk real low. All right. So talk to me about this watermelon margarita. What goes into it?
So what we make with that one is we use El Jimador tequila. We use agave nectar. Mm. Fresh lime juice, and then we add the watermelon puree to that to add just a little bit of the watermelon. It's not too crazy.
I'm so glad, Chad, that you guys don't use syrups, mm-hmm. like heavy syrups, because, I mean, I've had a watermelon margarita that is made with syrup. It's horrible. This is so refreshing and such a perfect summer drink. Now, are you a mixologist as well?
I try to be.
You try to be.
As best as I can, yes.
Did you come up through the ranks slinging drinks?
Slinging, yes, I did, yes.
Yeah.
So I worked my way up, and we just kind of played around with some ideas and came up with that, and the reviews have been pretty good so far.
So Dark Horse Tavern and watermelon margaritas don't sound like they go in the same sentence.
Same category.
Tell us about, for the people who've never been to Dark Horse, what is it like over there?
We have a great demographic, basically, there.
It's in Wrigley, right?
In Wrigley, yeah. So we have a huge Cubs following. We also have a lot of just patrons in the neighborhood. We have 24 drafts, which we rotate quite often. And then we also do a lot of cocktails as well. We have an outdoor beer garden.
Mostly, is it a Wrigley crowd? I mean, you're getting a lot of the Cubs?
We get a lot of the Cubs, like, game days.
Yeah.
Other than that, then we have a lot of people from the neighborhood that come through, people from all over.
Is this a staple on the menu now, the watermelon?
It is, yeah. For summertime, it's going to be.
Will you pull it in winter? Because this would remind me of summer all winter long.
If we can get the watermelons in wintertime, we'll
right,
do it.
I guess that would be the only problem.
Maybe I'll have to store some, you know, freeze them.
Yeah, I mean, which isn't a bad idea.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. And then you also brought a watermelon beer.
Yes. Oh, that is fantastic. It's 21st Amendment, Hell or High Water.
I'm just going to smell it first to get a little smelling profile here.
That's one of my favorites. It's staple summertime. It's not too over-the-top watermelon, but it is delicious. 4.9%, yeah, so it's easily drinkable.
And who is this made by? This is Hell or High Watermelon.
It's made by a 21st Amendment is the brewery.
Now, can you find this in like your local liquor store?
Yeah, Benny's, anywhere.
And is that a seasonal thing, or you can get that year-round?
Well, it was seasonal. I think they're making it year-round from now on, though, because it's been such a big seller.
That's awesome. So why is watermelon so great with alcohol? I mean, it's
just on the ads of the drink, I believe. You know, it's not too overpowering. It's just a nice little subtle hint of it.
And, I remember, I don't know if your parents did this back in the day, and maybe you. My mom always used to cut a watermelon, scoop out the little balls, and then pour, I don't know what kind of alcohol because I was so young, but they'd fill it with some kind of alcohol.
Right,
seal it back up. But this seems to be like a timeless tradition from God knows when.
Yeah, it seems to be. Yeah.
What is the perfect marriage of watermelon and alcohol?
I think it's just because it screams summer. You only get it for such a in Illinois.
Yeah.
You really start, they're just coming out of the ground now, like literally. And, you know, when you get them in the winter, they're pretty anemic coming from Mexico or far spots. So you only get like 4 or 5 weeks in Chicago.
You got to kind of grab it while you can. Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so what else? You got here a couple different Bloody Marys. So you got is this the Iron City Bloody Mary?
That is the Iron City, yeah, the one that you guys have right there.
What's up with the smoked honey pork sausage? What's the added bonus to that? I mean, it looks great. I'd like to take a little bite off that.
It's fantastic, and it just adds a nice little, something different that you don't see at every Bloody Mary.
You see, Bloody Mary is kind of an acquired taste, right?
It is an acquired taste, yeah.
Oh gosh, that's so good. And I can tell you, I'm usually not a fan of Bloody Marys. My wife is. That I could drink. I could drink that whole thing. And I don't like pickles either.
No pickles?
So this is good. You guys are winning me over on this.
All right.
So how about food at Dark Horse? What's on the menu? Tell me about what I can find on the summer.
Summertime, we do a seasonal menu as well. Summertime, we do a lot of... basically, we do a scratch kitchen. We try to mix as much stuff with our local beers, everything that we can make. So we do, you know, Goose Island. We do a 4-star battered green beans. That we lightly batter, deep fry, serve with a chipotle aioli. It's pretty fantastic.
Pulled pork nachos.
That is our go-to.
Braised pork shoulder, whiskey spiked barbecue sauce, cheddar cheese jalapenos.
It is. That's my go-to.
Dude, I'm
probably twice a week.
You haven't noticed the drool coming out of my mouth just talking about it. Sounds fascinating.
That's probably our best seller right there for sure.
What about the Moo and Oink burger?
The Moon Oink is just another one that we kind of created and kept on there. It's just a nice, huge burger, certified Black Angus beef. We do cheddar cheese, and then we put the pulled pork on top of that.
Wait. So go back here. You just flipped the switch on me.
That win you over again?
You did win me over. Well, first you won me over by bringing alcohol to the show. That's number one.
Right.
Number two, the handlebar mustache definitely won me over.
Thank you.
And then you just put pulled pork on top of a cheddar cheese burger. That certified Black Angus.
It is awesome.
I want to eat. I want to eat now.
I should have brought you some.
What are the hours? Where are we located? Give me all the details.
Oh, it's 3443 North Sheffield. And basically our hours, they rotate around the Cubs schedule. Every time there's a Cubs game, we open 2 hours prior. So if it's like a 1:20 game, we open at 11.
How late can you guys stay open?
We stay open at 2 and Saturdays 3.
That's good. And are you guys packed until the end usually?
Yes.
Kicking people out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yesterday was pretty busy. We had a bar crawl come through, so it was pretty wild.
So when the weather impacts the game, do you get this huge rush of people that were supposed to be at the games?
It actually helps us. You know, people either stay longer instead of going to the game early, or people go catch their innings, and if the rain comes, they got to get dry, so they come get a couple of drinks and kind of ride out the storm.
Good stuff, man. This is cool. Do you guys have a website?
We do, yes. The website is darkhorsechicago.com.
Darkhorsechicago.com. If you're in Wrigleyville, folks, go over and stop at Dark Horse. Ask for Chad. He'll personally make you one of these watermelon margaritas if he's not too busy, or one of these fascinating-looking Bloody Marys with a giant piece of meat hanging out of it. Good stuff. Guys, thank you so much for coming in. And we're going to stick on the beer topic, if you don't mind. And we're going to be talking to a designer, Annette. I'm going to screw this up. Constantinoukas? Is that good? Close enough? All right. Annette's going to be joining us on how to design a beer garden for yourself. She has tons of experience with it. And since we're drinking beer, that's a perfect topic.
The Frank Fontana Show. It's not just home improvement, it's life improvement.
Oh, man, what I would give right now to be sitting on a little reggae bar, drinking some margarita. I'm close enough. I mean, here, it's sunny out. We're listening to a little Marley. I got Chad hanging with me. I got Annette hanging with me. We're talking beer. We're talking drinks. Let's talk beer gardens. Annette Constantidoukas, is that right?
Constantidoukas, yes.
Close enough. I'm assuming it's Greek.
If you give him more beer, he's not going to be able to say the last
It'll
name.
It'll just be like...
Yeah.
Keep going. So, Annette, you're a designer, and you actually were behind the design of the Dark Horse Beer Garden, correct?
Yes.
All right. Well, tell me how you put it together.
So, the beer garden, we basically wanted to be an extension of the inside of the bar, and the inside of the bar is all wood walls, so we sort of took that outside, made it lighter, made it more modern, added some greenery, put a roof on it that you can take some of the... It has glass panels on it that you can take off.
The roof itself has the glass panels?
Yes.
Cool. Is it manual, or is it one of those
manual.
Electronic...
Yeah. Yeah, budget was a constraint with that. So.
Or isn't it all? I'm designing a restaurant right now, and budget seems to always be the issue.
Yeah. Yeah, so the glass panels come off depending on the weather, how many you want to take off. So it's kind of, it's really adjustable.
In your opinion, aside from beer being one of the most important elements to a beer garden, what are the like three top things you look for when it comes to designing a beer garden?
For me, one of the pet peeves that I have is those tables that have the, you know, the mesh tables that when you set your drink down and all the condensation
like
ends
the iron,
up in your lap.
The iron tables that are open,
Right. I don't really like those. So I like to do a wood or some kind of, you know, concrete, some kind of material that you would use somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree with you. I there is some functionality. I mean, that, and this is where budget comes into play.
Because
most owners will be like, no, just get me the cheapest patio set you can get. Nobody cares. It's beer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true.
Right.
I mean, because especially in Wrigley, it's somewhat of a tourist destination, right, Chad?
It is, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you're getting a lot of people from out of town who want that Wrigley experience, and they don't want to get, you know, condensation on their legs or dresses, right?
Exactly.
Are you into reclaimed wood for this kind of stuff?
Yeah, we did reclaim wood. So there's a 20-foot long table, communal table in the beer garden that was all reclaimed from a building in the neighborhood. And then the rest of the tabletops are also reclaimed.
Nice. Are you guys like have a hand in the design process, or did these guys completely, when I say these guys, I mean the restaurant owners, say, here's your carte blanche, Annette, go crazy?
Well, there was a tight budget. So basically just trying to do everything we can to make a big impact.
And lighting definitely plays into that. And you got to factor as a beer garden your exterior, but then you got to transition into the night and function in the night. So what was your solution for a transitional light system?
Well, we have this a couple of beer bottle chandeliers. So
I saw pictures, by the way. And do you have pictures posted on your Instagram?
Or I do.
What's your Instagram?
June 8th Studio.
June 8th Studio.
Yes.
And as well as on the website for Dark Horse, I'm sure, correct?
Correct.
Why don't we give that out one more time?
It's darkhorsechicago.com.
And you can see all the visuals, the design of the place. And so, again, walk me through what you did to transition to lighting. Is it typical string lighting?
There is string lighting, and then there's also the two beer bottle chandeliers. They're made of iron, and they're over the communal table, and it sort of gives this handcrafted, you know, they have handcrafted cocktails there. It gives this handcrafted look to
now,
the space.
Now, who did you make that yourself, or did you have somebody custom?
No, I bought them on Etsy.
God
and then,
bless
yeah,
Etsy.
And then you just add your own beer bottles to it. So whatever colors that you prefer, if you want to have more green or more clear or whatever.
And if you live under a rock and you don't know what Etsy is, it's actually a great place to find some really unique stuff from independent artists and artisans who are out there in the world who need to connect with people who are looking to buy stuff like this.
Yeah, you can find anything there.
Yeah, for our restaurant, I'm designing Myron Mixon's smoke show over on Grace and Clark in Wrigleyville. It's going to be opening in a couple months. We are doing something similar with Jim Beam. So Jim Beam is sponsoring the chandelier, and we have this like big iron wrap, so it looks like it's out of a beer barrel, with the bottles suspended from it. It's gonna be giant. It's gonna be like 4 foot wide. It's gonna be the centerpiece of a. So I love the idea. I mean, it seems like Wrigley is all about good food, good drink. You know, I think if you combine that into the design, did you take how much? Where did you draw your inspiration from? Really,
I sort of took a little bit of an industrial take on it. So just using handcrafted materials, reclaimed wood. There's behind the bar out there, there's sort of a handcrafted sign that says liquor store.
Like a vintagey throwback kind of feel?
Yeah, sort of vintagey, just kind of adding all those things.
Now, Chad, did you guys give much direction, or did you guys kind of say, hey, just run with it?
We helped out as much as I could. I didn't give too much direction, but she did a great job back there.
Cool. And do you get a good response from it? Because Beer Garden, I think, you know, when I moved here to Chicago many years ago, the Beer Garden to me was kind of a new phenomenon. Like, I mean, I heard of them, and then all my buddies who I met when I moved here, like, oh, dude, we got to go to the Beer Garden here. Got to go to beer. I'm like, what do you mean, Beer Garden? It's like I'm drinking beer on a patio.
It's great.
What makes it a garden? Can you define that for me, Annette? Like, what makes it a beer garden?
Well, I think what is defined as a beer garden is that it's an enclosed space. It's not a sidewalk patio where, you know, it's just
outside. It's a technical code term, basically.
It is, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
There are multiple liquor licenses in the city of Chicago, and the beer garden is one that's it's where the property is.
Got it.
So, like, a sidewalk cafe can only run from March 1st through December 1st. Beer garden can run year-round.
Interesting.
So then there's all these other little subcategories too, like catering, this, that. You know, there's a lot of nine different liquor licenses.
Wow, so complicated. I just like to drink the liquor.
Right.
I don't want to get into the whole process of it. That's why I stay on the design side of things.
Get a hold of yourself, Frank.
What's happening? What's happening, Dave? Just having a good time?
Because then you're going to make everybody drink here.
Well, which is a good thing. I mean, wait, do I see a cocktail in your hand over there, Dave?
I'm just, it's for my journalistic
research.
Yes.
R&D, research and development.
Sunday fun day.
I see Maddie sipping on a cocktail back there, too. This is all just research. We're just trying to figure this out.
Watermelon.
I'm going to be testing you after the show, Dave. What ingredients went into this?
Uh-oh. Let me study.
Yeah. Do some more studying, guys. Appreciate that. Well, this is awesome. I appreciate it. I love getting the behind the scenes of what it takes to put a beer garden together, learning more about Dark Horse. And before I let you go, who founded it? Like, what's the story behind it?
The gentleman right out there. Nico, he's the owner.
Nico, what's up? Why aren't you in here, Nico? I mean, you got the owner sitting outside, and you guys are in here talking about it. That's great.
He likes to be behind the scenes, behind the glass, per se.
So, Nico, I'd ask you a question, but I mean, I could talk to you on the street mic over there, and you could speak back to us. Does that thing work, Dave? That street mic?
It sure does. We can try it. He can speak right on the
airway. Hey, Nico, can you hear us?
No pressure.
Why don't you say here? Let's see if he could talk back to us. I don't think it's working, Dave.
Yeah, it should be working. The other shows use it.
See, I don't know. I'm pushing the wrong buttons then.
Well, he was the real estate broker that sold the original owners the bar. It was three friends that bought it initially, and two of them were kind of irresponsible.
I've never heard that story in the bar business.
Right, exactly.
Hey, dude, let's open a bar. Yeah, and then 3 weeks later, they're like, man, we got to work.
Yeah, his friend asked him to help him get the books in order and get things together, and then eventually he bought two of the partners out.
Smart.
Yeah.
And Nico, I know you can't really talk through us, but maybe your wife can translate through the glass. Was it the right move for you? He's nodding his head. Yes. That's good. How about for you, Annette? I mean,
when he said, oh, I'm going to buy a bar, I was like, this is just an excuse to hang out with your friends and drink.
Right. But as long as it's financially lucrative, everybody wins in this.
Yes.
And you got to explore your design side.
Yeah.
So everybody wins. Nico, you're a smart man. I got to learn from you, my friend. That's awesome. Well, good stuff. This has been fun. A very unexpected twist to the end of the show. And we like that. Once again, why don't we give the website out? Because people are asking over our text message. Did you say Dark Horse in Wrigleyville? Yes. Where exactly is it?
3443 North Sheffield.
Boom.
And the website again is darkhorsechicago.com.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks for the cocktails and the education on beer gardens. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you, Annette.
Thank you.